As with this morning, it's probably most of the things that I'll say you've heard before. But it's no harm to discuss that which we have heard before about Srila Prabhupada, because discussion of Srila Prabhupada is always purifying. And though we've heard these topics before, by discussing repeatedly, realization increases. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, Advaita Prabhu is described as an Acharya. Therefore, he is known as Advaita Acharya. And in the purport, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur describes that the symptom of an Acharya is his compassion for the fallen conditioned souls. For this reason, Advaita was known as an Acharya, because seeing the fallen conditions, the fallen condition of the souls in Kali Yuga, he wanted to call Krishna to this world to deliver them. So an Acharya must have many qualities. He is expected to be learned, self-controlled, austere. Of course, he to be a true Acharya must be a Vaishnava, must have pure devotion for Krishna. And then all other qualities of Vaishnava are expected to decorate his character, such as patience, tolerance, and so on. However, the distinguishing feature of a great Acharya is above and beyond all these qualities to have compassion for the fallen conditioned souls. There are many Vaishnavas who are very pure in their habits, attached to the holy names, learned, austere, and so on. But that quality of compassion is especially pleasing to Krishna and sets the great Acharyas apart from even other great devotees. And this is what certainly distinguishes Srila Prabhupada from all his contemporaries, that he cared for us so much that he took the risk to come to the Western countries to preach. Risk means, even physically it was a risk. Prabhupada was warned by his contemporaries, don't go to the West, you're an old man, you may die outside Vrindavan. At this age, to go traveling like this is not recommended. And you won't, Prabhupada didn't expect to get the ingredients for the diet that he required when he was in America. He brought a bag of some kind of cereal and he thought, if necessary, he'll eat that as long as it lasts, and otherwise he'll just eat potatoes. Srila Prabhupada was pleasantly surprised to find that New York was so cosmopolitan, even at that time, that he could get all the ingredients required for his typically Indian diet. So physically, it was a risk, and even spiritually, it's a risk. It would be taken as a risk. Now, of course, we could never think that Srila Prabhupada would fall down, but certainly lesser devotees in that situation would be, their Krishna consciousness would be severely strained. It wouldn't be easy for any of us to go to any city in the world where there are no other devotees and start a center of Krishna consciousness. What to speak of going to a country you've never been to before. Even if we were to start a center, now we now have so many resources. We have a Krishna conscious movement all over the world. But Prabhupada went out really alone. I mean, there was literally no one with him. And there weren't even any real well-wishers back in India. There was no one really encouraging him. He didn't have any association. But he had compassion and great faith in the order of his spiritual master. Tremendous faith that had sustained his life. That was the very meaning of his life. First time Prabhupada met Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he didn't want to see him. His friend dragged him. He was a young man. He was thinking, I saw so many sadhus, they're all bogus, I don't want to see anymore. But anyway, out of deference to the desire of his friend, he went to see Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And despite his not wanting to be there, he followed the standard culture of offering obeisances to a sannyasi. And normally when you see someone for the first time, you ask, well, who are you, where are you from? There's some kind of introduction. But just as Abhay and his friend Narendranath Malik, they were offering obeisances, just they were getting up, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said, you are both educated young men, you should preach Krishna consciousness all over the world. Quite an introduction. Especially seeing as Abhay, he was ready to challenge. He was bold even at that time. He was always ready to challenge everybody. So, Prabhupada challenged Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. Young man, you challenged Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. Not that he was against the idea of preaching Chaitanya's message, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's message. But he said, who will listen to your message? First, India has to become politically independent, otherwise who will listen to this message? But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur replied that Krishna consciousness is too urgent to wait for any political adjustment. We have to preach right now. So Prabhupada explained that he argued with Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and he was defeated. He said, it's the only time in my life I was ever defeated. But I was very happy. So after some time, actually after 11 years, he was formally accepted as a disciple by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. Due to circumstances, he didn't have much physical contact with him during the 11 years between his first contact and his initiation. But as Prabhupada explained, he was always thinking of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur within his heart, and he accepted him as his spiritual master from that first day of seeing him. So that's explained how Prabhupada one time he went to visit Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur when they were on the Rajamandal Parikrama, and he listened to his lecture, which was a long one, as was common with Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And there weren't many devotees present. Most of them had gone off to some pilgrimage place. So at the end of the lecture, there were hardly anyone left to listen. Prabhupada also explained that I used to listen, but I didn't understand because the language was so tough. But anyway, I liked to listen. So when Prabhupada came for initiation, he came forward for initiation in 1933 in Allahabad. He had not been formally introduced to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati at this time, but he was known to the members of the Gauriya Math at Allahabad, and he was recommended for Harinam, which we call first initiation. But on seeing him, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur immediately offered that he should immediately take Diksha, he should take first and second initiation together, which he very rarely did, especially for a householder living outside. He didn't very often do this. But he recognized that this is the same person who at that lecture he gave in that candle lit, or it would have been lit by an oil lamp, in the oil lamp tent some months ago. He had listened and listened and listened and did not go away. There was no personal introduction at that time of Rajamandal Parikrama, but he had noticed in the lamplight how this Abhay Charan, he listens, he stays and listens. So recognizing that qualification, he wanted to immediately give him first and second initiation. Now, shortly before Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was passing away from this world, Prabhupada, again, he wrote him a letter, as you know, saying that you have so many disciples who are brahmacharis and sannyasis who are serving you in so many ways. But I'm simply a householder, entangled in so many activities. How in this condition can I serve you? So Prabhupada later noted that the only question he ever asked of his Guru Maharaj was, how can I serve you? So the reply came back that, from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, the reply came back that you are competent in English language, so if you preach in English, that will be very good for you and good for others. And Prabhupada recognized that as the same instruction he had received at the first time he met Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. It was the first and last instructions he got from him, and maybe the only ones also. So Prabhupada fixed that order in his heart. He took it very seriously. And he had great faith that by the orders of following the order of the spiritual master, everything will be successful. And it was that faith that took him across the seas to America and sustained him there, despite everybody else's lack of interest, and even despite everybody else's lack of interest in what he was doing. Not only lack of it, if there was anything, it was discouragement. The Prabhupada had faith in the order of his Guru Maharaj above everything else that anybody else in the world said or did. He had firm faith in Guru and Shastra. Prabhupada would always preach that they never went to the moon. He made a point of preaching about this. Very interesting, in the 8th canto of Bhagavatam, it's described about the fight between the demigods and the demons. And it's described that the fighting was so ferocious that the blood was spattered up to the region of the sun. Now, the text has got nothing to do with the moon being further away than the sun or any such thing. Prabhupada noted that here it is described that the blood reached up to the area of the sun, the level of the sun, but not that of the moon. This shows that the moon is further away than the sun. Prabhupada was so much convinced about this that it wasn't something that he said, well, you know, it's in Shastra, let's just write a little note here and hope everyone forgets it. But he took every opportunity to preach it, even in the face of all disbelief. He told the members of the Bhaktivedanta Institute that they should hold conferences and preach all over the world, emphasizing two points. One, that the moon is further away than the sun. And two, that the chicken is a better scientist than you. Because you are simply talking about producing life, but the chicken lays an egg and produces life. So he's a better scientist than you. So this Prabhupada had complete faith that by following Guru and Shastra, everything will be perfect. And he didn't care what even his own godbrother said if it wasn't in line with Guru and Shastra. He didn't care what all the rest of the world said. On that moon point, there's another interesting exchange. There's the so-called first landing of man on the moon was in 1969. So in 1968, all of America was in euphoria about, soon we are going to send a man to the moon and it's going to be an American. So it was a hot topic of discussion, Americans. This is the summit of evolution. Man descended from a monkey and then became Homo sapiens. And then there's American Homo sapiens, which is more developed than others. And this is the proof that Homo sapiens Americanus is about to go to the moon. So one interviewer in 1968 asked Prabhupada, well, what do you think about the going to the moon? Prabhupada said, it's all bogus. You cannot go to the moon. So of course the journalist was shocked. He was completely convinced that they were going to go to the moon. And maybe he thought Prabhupada was some kind of eccentric Indian old man or something like this. So he asked Prabhupada, he said, well, what if they do go to the moon? You know, what if we go to the moon? You know, we are going to go to the moon, but let's put it theoretically to the Swami. What if we go to the moon? He said, won't that affect the faith of your disciples? That now you're telling that they can't go to the moon, but when we do go to the moon, surely that will affect the faith of your disciples. You've got to watch what you're saying. The Prabhupada said, no, it won't affect the faith of my disciples because you can't go, you're not going to go. So I went back and forward like this, and the reporter said, well, what if they do go? He said, well, you're not going to go. And when they were going to the moon, it was shown on TV, and Prabhupada was sitting and watching and laughing. It's all a hoax. And apparently, so I'm told, there's a big thing on the internet now that so many NASA scientists, ex-NASA scientists are coming out and revealing it was all a hoax. Well, anyway, whether the NASA scientists say it or not, it was all a hoax. Prabhupada, he wouldn't have emphasized this so strongly if he wasn't completely convinced, and he was completely convinced on the basis of Shastra. So this firm faith, Prabhupada had this firm faith in the order of Guru. The order of Guru means that is the desire of Krishna. And though it may seem to be materially impossible to fulfill, it is possible by the grace of Krishna. Because Krishna can do anything. And especially if he wants something, then definitely it will happen. So Prabhupada had faith that preaching in the Western countries is possible, although it seems impossible. But Krishna does so many impossible things. He swallows forest fires and goes off through the coverings of the universe to see Mahavishnu. Makes this. When the sun goes down, he brings it up again in the battle when Jayadratha was killed. So if Krishna wants, the preaching can also be, Western people can also become Vaishnavas. However, it doesn't just happen just by pressing some cosmic button. So many wonderful things Krishna does through his devotees. But he does wonderful things through his most wonderful and surrendered devotees. There were many monkeys who were sent out to try and find Sita. And they were all devotees of Lord Ram, at least they all became in due course of time. But only one of them found Sita, that was Hanuman. That mercy was to do that, the mercy to do that service was granted to him. There were many warriors on the side of the Pandavas, but it was to Arjuna that Krishna said, Nimitta Matram Bhavasabhya Sarcha, you be the instrument for me to win this battle. Great mercy fell to these great devotees because they were great devotees. The mercy of preaching Krishna consciousness all over the world went to Srila Prabhupada. Why so, he explained himself. Prabhupada said that sometimes I'm surprised why this wonderful thing has happened to me. This Krishna consciousness spread all over the world, and this I've been instrumental in this, Prabhupada was indicating. So how has this happened to me? I have so many God brothers who are in so many ways qualified as much or more than me, Prabhupada was saying. Many of them were very learned, very austere, had so much association with Guru Maharaj. So when I examined, Prabhupada said, how this has happened to me and not to others, he said that I find there is one specific qualification. He said that only I had full faith in the orders of my Guru Maharaj. Prabhupada had full faith that the holy name can purify. Even when Prabhupada came back to India with his first Western disciples, when he first came with his Western disciples, even at that time and for many years afterwards, most of his God brothers didn't accept that Prabhupada's disciples were actually Vaishnavas. They would find out so many faults. And actually, it could be said that especially the first batch of Prabhupada disciples, in many ways it could be said they had many faults. I mean, for many years it could be said that Prabhupada's disciples were pretty boisterous lot. You know what that means, boisterous? It means highly spirited to the point of being almost uncontrolled. A little wild, little or more so wild, and not very cultured.
No.
And coming to India, where people at that time especially had, you know, they were very stringent about following so many different rules of sadhacha, proper behavior. So Prabhupada's disciples were a little raw and rough, could be said. And at that time, they didn't have very deep knowledge of Shastra by any means. I mean, Prabhupada, you hear those first lectures in New York, I mean, he was just making his point. Each point he would make with great labor, he would, month after month, he would be preaching very, what we would call very basic topics of Krishna consciousness. Now, when someone joins the Krishna consciousness movement, they find so many devotees who are very learned. In philosophy and they can explain it. And the whole atmosphere of having so many devotees who are convinced about this philosophy helps others to easily pick it up. But in the beginning there was only Prabhupada who understood at all what he was talking about. And he had to personally teach all those who came to him all the points of Vaishnava philosophy. As Prabhupada said, we have to spend gallons of blood to make one person a devotee. So Prabhupada put a lot of time and energy into training his early disciples. But even then, when they came to India, his disciples seemed rather raw and rough and uncultured compared to so many people who in India who had a lifetime of being brought up in that very deep culture. So mostly among his godbrothers in the beginning, they were very hesitant to accept Prabhupada's disciples as actually being Vaishnavas. When you see that they kind of put tilak on, but wasn't really the proper design, and they kind of played the mridanga, but not really the proper beats. They chanted Hare Krishna, but didn't pronounce it properly. They didn't know much, could hardly quote any Sanskrit verses. And even those, for Indian people, the way the new American devotees were pronouncing, they could hardly have any idea that they were trying to say Sanskrit. So they thought that, maybe some kind of devotees, but they really, not really devotees. They thought, it's something they've taken up and they'll drop it after a few days. They've seen so many young Westerners coming to hippies and their attempts at spiritual life, which mostly consisted of smoking a lot of ganja. So they thought, these followers of Bhaktivedanta Swami, they're just the same stock, they're not different. So why should we accept them as Vaishnavas? But Prabhupada didn't have any such misgivings. On the basis of Shastra, he accepted that, yes, they are Vaishnavas. They're Brahmins. Shastra states that anyone from any background, if they chant the holy names, they're automatically purified. Prabhupada was aware of his disciples' rawness or need to be trained more. And he gave his whole time and energy to train them more. He always strongly defended that, yes, these are real Vaishnavas. He had faith that the holy name actually purifies. That even if they can't play mridanga properly, they can't pronounce Sanskrit properly, they are purified because they're chanting the holy names, even if they're not chanting with proper pronunciation. Generally, Vaishnavas are very strict about who they accept food from. Vaishnavas and Brahmanas are very strict. So even among Prabhupada's godbrothers, even those who are somewhat favorable and said, yes, this is very good work you've done, they would not dream of taking any food that was cooked by Prabhupada's Western disciples. But Prabhupada had no such misgivings. He accepted, yes, they're chanting, they're fully purified. This was Prabhupada's faith, and not only faith, but compassion. How much compassion is required to risk your life, and even risk your own spiritual life, that you may die outside Vrindavan, to risk all comfort. Prabhupada was respected in Vrindavan. He was going to America where no one respects anybody. So he took on all difficulties because he had the faith in the order of his Guru Maharaj and the strong sense of duty that I must attempt to fulfill the order of my Guru. That my Guru has ordered me to preach, therefore it is my duty to do so. I cannot avoid doing that. But he, over and above that, he had the compassion to really try to make people devotees. He could have done a little preaching and said, okay, I'll try, that's enough, now I'm going back to do my bhajan and Vrindavan. He had so much feeling of the need to give Krishna consciousness to others that he sacrificed everything for doing so. Even though no one showed any real interest, Prabhupada would often starve. He didn't have enough money but he would, when he was in Delhi, he would go without meals so that he could save up money to buy paper for printing his books. Yeah. Same thing when he was first in New York. He was, you know, he had no money, and sometimes he wrote one letter to Sally Agarwal, that sometimes I'm feeling hungry, but what to do? He was willing to take all kinds of difficulties for the sake of trying to give Krishna consciousness to others, and to go on explaining the same basic points again and again and again. Sometimes some foolish rascals, they like to criticize Prabhupada, but he only taught basic things. Prabhupada taught, he gave everything. But that he went on teaching these basic points over and over and over again, that was his supreme compassion, so that people could get a start in understanding Krishna conscious philosophy. So the great mercy was given to him because he had great faith and great compassion. Therefore, Krishna. Sometimes we hear that such and such is such a contemporary of Srila Prabhupada is such a great, highly advanced devotee. Because they're always speaking on Gopi Leelas. So that's nice, they're speaking on Gopi Leelas. Of course, speaking is one thing.
Nice.
But doing is something else. Gopis are famous as the topmost devotees of Krishna because they were willing to sacrifice everything for Krishna without any personal consideration. And even they're prepared to go to hell for Krishna. So Prabhupada didn't speak very much about the gopis, but he exemplified that mood of sacrificing everything for Krishna. No one else was even thinking of how to save all the conditioned souls. Mostly they were satisfied with having a few mugs and doing some bhajan, kirtan, collecting some rice, cooking it. I've seen many mugs in India where the basic activities are maybe have a little bhajan in the morning when they get up, go out and collect some bhoga, come back, cook it, offer it to the deity, take prasad, go to sleep, wake up another little bhajan, and then again cook, offer bhog to the deities, take prasad, and go to sleep. And that is the whole day, spiritual life. Mostly centered around eating and sleeping. So, Prabhupada was, he had a different vision, that we have to save the conditioned souls by giving them knowledge of Krishna, giving them taste of Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada was prepared to give every drop of his blood for doing so. There's that other famous incident. Prabhupada had been sick for some time. He was traveling all over America, every place, 2-3 days. Very strenuous schedule. And I can imagine that sometimes I'm traveling like that constantly, and after some time you just feel like really worn out. It's difficult. Prabhupada was doing that at such an advanced age. So he was traveling around America and he was getting more and more sick actually. So when he came to New York, all the big leaders of the movement came and they were pressing Prabhupada that you have to stay here now and get healthy, then you go out and preach. So Prabhupada, he didn't protest, he didn't say anything. He didn't protest anything they said. But the time was arriving for his scheduled departure. So he told the servants, okay, pack up. And the devotee said, well, Prabhupada, you have to stay now and we'll just stay a few days. Prabhupada just ignored them and told them, pack up, we're going now. They were going out, Prabhupada got in the lift in a big building in New York, got in the lift and was going down. And the devotees, yeah. And the devotees were remonstrating with him. They were protesting to Prabhupada. Prabhupada didn't say anything. The lift came to the ground floor. Doors opened. Prabhupada walked out. The devotees were still saying to Prabhupada, you're sick, you have to stay. Prabhupada just reached the entrance of the building. He turned around and said to the devotees, that you do not understand. He said, I'm praying to Krishna for the blessing to give my last drop of blood preaching for him. That if necessary, I'll die fighting in the battlefield. I want to fight for Krishna like Arjuna did, blood water. So that mood, that tremendous compassion, spirit of service, this is Prabhupada's great qualification as an acharya. He's trying to explain something about Prabhupada's qualification as acharya. It'll help us to appreciate something. Although to fully appreciate and to fully explain is not possible. Anyway, I must say I'm very, very grateful to Srila Prabhupada. He's very, very happy that he's accepted me as his disciple. Just praying that get even some little bit of that quality.
Mm-hmm.
Prabhupada told his disciples, do as I am doing. This is parampara. So not very easy to do as Prabhupada is doing. Mm-hmm. Prabhupada said, all my sannyasis should make more disciples than me.
Mm-hmm.
Should open more centers than me and write more books than me.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not very... It doesn't seem possible to even fulfill even one of those orders. One of those dictums. Well, that's another part of Prabhupada's mercy. That he certainly didn't leave us any lack of service. So let us all pray to Srila Prabhupada for the benediction of being the servant of his servants. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.
Jai.